Michael Franti, Bomb the World. Michael is in Iraq right now. We are going to hear from him later from Baghdad. Memorial services for former President Ronald Reagan continue today as thousands of people file into his presidential library to pay their respects. This is Democracy Now! I am Amy Goodman. Yesterday, at the close of a brief family ceremony at the library, Nancy Reagan touched her cheek to the flag-draped casket, began to cry, and was embraced tightly by her daughter, Patty Davis. A band played Hail to the Chief, and flags at half-staff gently waved under an overcast sky as eight armed forces members removed the casket from the hearse and placed it in the library rotunda before the service. Meanwhile, Reagan's office announced that former President George H.W. Bush, former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and former Canadian Prime Minister Brian Mulroney will join current President Bush in eulogizing Ronald Reagan at his funeral service on Friday. But as the tributes and memorials dominate the U.S. media, and Reagan is remembered as the great communicator and the man who won the Cold War, for many in Central America, Ronald Reagan is remembered very differently. Today on the program, we continue our week-long series, Remembering the Dead. We'll look at the Reagan legacy as seen from the target end of his foreign policy. The 8 years President Reagan was in office represented one of the most bloody eras in the history of the Western Hemisphere, as Washington funneled money, weapons, and other supplies to right-wing death squads. And the death toll was staggering. More than 70,000 killings in El Salvador, more than 150,000 in Guatemala. At least 30,000 died in the Contra War in Nicaragua. In Washington, the forces carrying out the violence were labeled freedom fighters. Here is how Ronald Reagan described the Contras of Nicaragua.
They are our brothers, these freedom fighters, and we owe them our life. They are the moral equal of our founding fathers.
Ronald Reagan describing the Contras. Today we turn to two people. We begin with Father Miguel Descoto. He is a Catholic priest based in Managua, Nicaragua. He was Nicaragua's foreign minister under the Sandinista government in the 1980s. We welcome you to Democracy Now!
Good morning, Amy. Thank you.
It's good to have you with us. If you could share your description of what happened under President Reagan's reign in the United States in Nicaragua. There are many people right now who are listening who may have been children at that time.
Okay, Amy, first of all, let me start out by saying that, of course, Reagan is now dead. And I, for one, would like to say only nice things about him. I'm not insensitive to the feelings of many U.S. people mourning President Reagan. But as much as I sincerely pray that God in his infinite mercy and goodness forgive him for having been the butcher of my people, for having been responsible for the death of some 50,000 Nicaraguans, we cannot and should not ever forget the crimes he committed in the name of what he falsely labeled freedom and democracy. More perhaps than any other U.S. president, Reagan convinced many around the world that the U.S. is a fraud, a big lie, not only not democratic, but in fact the greatest enemy of the right of self-determination of peoples. Reagan, as you mentioned just a few minutes ago, was known as the great communicator. And I believe that that is true only if one believes that to be a good communicator means to be a good liar. And that he was for sure. He could proclaim the biggest lies without even as much as blinking an eyelash. Hearing him talk about how we were supposedly persecuting Jews and burning down non-existent synagogues in Managua, I was led to believe, really, that Reagan was possessed by demons. And frankly, I do believe Reagan, at that time, as much as Bush today, was indeed possessed by the demons of manifest destiny. Of course, as I say this, I'm quite aware that to the people of, for example, Project New American Century, that is counted as a big plus. Because of Reagan and his spiritual heir, George W. Bush, the world today is far less safe and secure than it has ever been. Reagan, in fact, was an international outlaw. He came to the presidency of the United States shortly after Somoza, the dictator that the U.S. had imposed over Nicaragua for practically half a century, had been deposed by Nicaraguan nationalists under the leadership of the Sandinista Liberation Front. To Reagan, Nicaragua had to be reconquered. He blamed Carter for having lost Nicaragua, as if Nicaragua ever belonged to anyone else except the Nicaraguan people. But that was then the beginning of this war that Reagan invented and mounted and financed and directed, the Contra War, about which he continually lied to the people, helping the United States people to be the most ignorant people around the world. I said ignorant, I don't say not intelligent, but certainly the most ignorant people around the world about what the United States does abroad. People don't even begin to see, if they did, they would rebel. And so he lied to the people as Bush lies to the people today. And as they push on, thinking that the United States is above every law, human or divine. And we took the United States, Reagan's United States, his government, to court, the world court. I was foreign minister at that time here in Nicaragua, and I was responsible for that. And the United States government received the harshest sentence, the harshest condemnation ever in the history of world justice. And in spite of the fact that the United States, since the early 20s, has been proclaiming to the world that one of the proofs of its moral superiority as compared to other countries around the world is the fact that it abides by the international law and that it was obedient to the World Court. When the United States was brought to the World Court by Nicaragua and received the condemnation, the United States failed to heed the sentence. They still owe Nicaragua. By now it must be, I don't know, between $20 and $30,000 billion. at the time when we left government, that the damages caused by that Reagan war was over $17 billion. And this, according to very moderate estimators of damage, people from the United Nations Economic Commission for Latin America, people from Harvard University and from Oxford and from the University of Paris. Basically, this is the team that we pulled together to estimate the damage. The United States was ordered to pay for the damage. Bush never even wanted to talk to me about it. As it is, I said, we have to meet in order so that you comply with the sentence of the court. And he said to me on two different letters that there was nothing to talk about. And so Reagan did damage to Nicaragua beyond the imagination of the people who are hearing me now. And the ripple effects of that criminal, murderous intervention in my country will go on for what, 50 years or more.
We're talking to Father Miguel Descoto, Catholic priest based in Managua, Nicaragua. He was Nicaragua's foreign minister under the Sandinista government of the 1980s. When we come back, we'll talk to a soldier from Vietnam who returned his Congressional Medal of Honor over the U.S. support of the Contras. And then we'll be joined by journalist and activist Alan Nairn, who covered El Salvador and Guatemala extensively. This is Democracy Now! Back in a minute.
¿Qué cosa es el sonidello? Le pregunté a Baltasar Nicoya. Y él tiró una piedra a Gómez al fondo del río y cuando esta volvió a salir me dijo, mírela, mírela, mírela cómo se sonidella.
Son tus perfumes los que me sonidella, los que me sonidella. Son tus perfumes, mujer. Son tus perfumes, mujer, los que me sublimean, los que me sublimean. Son tus perfumes, mujer.
La primera en la frente, dijo Espiridión Pichincha, y aquí está.
Tus ojos son de colorín. Ay, cómo me aletean,
ay, cómo me aletean.
The music of Carlos Mejia Godoy of Nicaragua, his son, Carmelo Mejia, has been court-martialed in the last few weeks at Fort Stewart, Georgia. From the Florida National Guard, he went to Iraq, and when he came back on leave, he refused to return. In his CO application, his conscientious objector application, he said that he had witnessed abuse of prisoners in Iraq and did not want to return to participate, but volunteered to testify before Congress. Instead, he was court-martialed. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we turn to Charlie Littke, who won the Congressional Medal of Honor for saving some 20 soldiers in Vietnam. In 1986, he laid that medal at the Vietnam War Memorial in protest of U.S. support of the Contras in Nicaragua. We welcome you to Democracy Now!
It's good to be here.
You are a former U.S. Army chaplain. Your thoughts today about the Reagan legacy in Central America as we continue our series, Remembering the Dead?
Well, all of this lionization of President Reagan, which is coming over the TV now and on almost every channel, is just nauseous to me. I've gotten to a point where I can't even turn it on until all of the accolades are over. As far as I'm concerned, President Reagan was in the same category with the man we have in there now. He was responsible. He was an accomplice to the death of thousands, literally thousands and thousands of people. And the public, I don't think, is much aware of this now. You know, this is all part of history, and we seem to have a very short memory for the atrocities committed by people we hold in high esteem. Anyway, I became aware of the fact that what was going on in Central America during the 80s, and President Reagan was right in there from 1984 or 1985 on, and he was in great support of the military in El Salvador, which is one of the most brutal militaries in history, and also the Contras in Central America, or rather in Nicaragua. I think it's been said very eloquently by Miguel Descoto, who preceded me, that all of the things that he's responsible for. I went to Central America several times. I went with a group of Vietnam veterans to El Salvador and Nicaragua and Honduras, and I came back with a changed mind, and it was a beginning of a process of metamorphosis for me to discover what our government has been involved in over the years. And so as a result of my visit to El Salvador and Nicaragua, I decided that I no longer wanted a medal associated with the government that would be behind such things by way of policy. Also, I wanted to draw attention to what we were doing in Central America in the name of freedom and democracy. And when President Reagan said, "I am a Contra too," I said that he insulted every American patriot when he referred to these killers of children, old men and women, as freedom fighters, comparable to the founding fathers of our country. That, to me, that's an obscenity. So I just said, you know, in the name of freedom and national security and national interests and anti-communism, you have tried to justify crimes against humanity of the most heinous sort. You made a global bully of the United States. You would not dare to do that to countries capable of defending themselves. What you have done to tiny nations like El Salvador and Nicaragua and Honduras. So I, you know, wrote just a one-page letter, laid it at the apex of the Vietnam War, where the names of the victims of that war and the lies of that war are etched in black marble. And I felt that that was an appropriate place to leave it, because the soldiers of Vietnam, those who died, those who were wounded, were victims of lies of that area, just as these poor kids now in Iraq are victims of the lies of this administration. So it was a poignant moment for me, because I was very proud of the fact to have received that particular award. So, but I just felt that that was all I could take at that particular time. And I finally ended the letter to President Reagan with this short paragraph. I said, "I pray for your conversion, Mr. President. Some morning I hope you wake up and hear the cry of the poor riding on a southwest wind from Guatemala, Nicaragua, and El Salvador. They're crying, 'Stop killing us.' And it's still going on." And that's the really sad thing. And so, as far as President Reagan is concerned, that's my eulogy for him. All I can say is, you know, may God have mercy on him. But it's not for me to judge. But It is for me, and I think it is for every American, to be aware of what's being done in our name around the world. And it was not just then, it's been going on ever since then. And this mess in Iraq is, to me, it's far worse than Vietnam, for a lot of reasons. And I am in deep sympathy with all of those young men who are over there now, doing what they think is their patriotic duty. I think it is more the patriotic duty of citizens of this country to stand up and say that this is wrong, that this is immoral.
Charlie Lipke returned the Congressional Medal of Honor, was a U.S. Army chaplain in Vietnam, saved more than 20 soldiers in Vietnam, laid down that medal in 1986, protesting U.S. involvement in Central America in the midst of the Reagan years in Washington. As we turn now to Alan Nairn, journalist and activist, won a number of awards for his reporting in Central America, from El Salvador to Guatemala, wrote for The New Republic, The Nation, The Progressive. His cover story in The New Republic was Bureaucracy of Death, co-written with Jean Marie Simon. Alan, we are now hearing in the United States a great deal about Reagan foreign policy couched as a war against communism. Can you respond to that and talk specifically about Guatemala and El Salvador?
Well, communism was the excuse for what Reagan did in Central America, but the victims were not communists. The victims were priests and peasants and labor leaders and student leaders and academics and journalists and others who, especially in the late 70s, both in Guatemala and Salvador, had coalesced into some very strong popular movements. And the thing they were responding to was the fact that in both those countries, hundreds of thousands of people every year were dying unnecessarily from malnutrition, from diarrhea, from malaria. People were living on hillsides, trying to eke out a living on corn crops that could only feed a family for 3 or 4 months because the plot was so small, because of the large finqueros had all the good land. And people tried to find a peaceful solution to this preventable death, mainly of children. In many villages in Guatemala and Salvador, half the kids would die before the age of 5, through peaceful means, through strikes on the sugar plantations, where they would ask for an extra 40 cents a day in wages, strikes in places like the Coca-Cola plant in Guatemala, calls for enforcement of a real minimum wage. And the response to this by the militaries of El Salvador and Guatemala, in both cases backed by the Reagan administration, the response was death squads. In Guatemala, they had names like the Mano Blanca, the White Hand, the ESA, the secret anti-communist army. They would often pass out leaflets listing the names of the people they intended to execute, sometimes illustrated with their photos, and they complied. They would follow up. They would roam the streets in vans. They would come into houses in the middle of the night wearing hoods. They would drag people away, and the next few days, their mutilated bodies would turn up by the roadside, often with the genitals removed, or stuffed in the mouth, hands severed. And this was effective. It worked. The popular movements in both Salvador and Guatemala were crushed. And in response, many of the survivors went to the hills. They joined up with the very small, until that time, guerrilla groups, several of which had a communist ideology and were backed by Cuba. And they tried to fight that way. When they did that, that was seen by Reagan and his people, Alexander Haig, the Secretary of State, Jean Kirkpatrick, the UN ambassador, Elliot Abrams, the human rights and Latin America chief, John Negroponte, the ambassador to Honduras. This was seen as a strategic success because it made it that much easier politically for the U.S. To justify what it was doing, to saying, see, we're fighting communists, we're fighting an armed insurgency. That's why we're backing these governments. And what they backed was really one of the most intensive campaigns of mass murder in recent history. In Guatemala, during Reagan's time, about 200,000 civilians were massacred. A couple of thousand of armed guerrillas were killed in combat. In Salvador, probably on the order of 70,000 civilians massacred. Again, a couple of thousand of armed guerrillas killed in combat. When Reagan was running for president against Carter in 1980, his campaign and his foreign policy team actually sent emissaries to Guatemala, and they met with the military chiefs. They met with the heads of CACIF, which was the Guatemalan Chambers of Commerce, Agriculture, Industry, and Finance, the, you know, the convening body of the oligarchy. And they told them, according to discussions I had with the people they met with, that once Reagan came to office, they would have a freer hand. They had been getting some criticism from the State Departments of Ford and then Carter. And the U.S. Congress, to its credit, had blocked direct U.S. Arms sales to Guatemala. So with approval from Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's national security advisor, Israel stepped in to fill the gap and was selling Galil automatic rifles and Uzi submachine guns and Aravat transport planes and other military goods to Guatemala. But they had to do it indirectly. The U.S. was, it was difficult for the Guatemalan army. So Reagan's campaign emissaries told the death squad chieftains in the oligarchy and in the military, don't worry, when we come in, you'll get a free hand. And that's basically what happened. One of the people who went down on behalf of Reagan was General Vernon Walters, who later became his special emissary to Guatemala. And at the ruler of Guatemala at the time was General Lucas Garcia. Under his reign, the military focused its attacks on unions and on peasant groups, on two, and also on the church, the Catholic Church, which they saw as a subversive force because it was telling the poor that they also were humans in the sight of God, that they had rights, they had the right to ask for more. And on two occasions, they actually, the military death squads actually went in and abducted the entire labor leadership of Guatemala, which was holding conventions. They picked them all up. They disappeared, never to be seen again. Walters went down, met publicly with General Lucas, embraced him and said, we love your devotion to peace and liberty and constitutional institutions. About a year and a half later, when General Lucas was replaced by General Rios Montt, who took power in a coup, the strategy shifted. Rios Montt shifted to the countryside, the Mayan highlands of the Northwest, where the indigenous population, in an especially bold and brave move, because they were even more impoverished than the Ladino working people of the cities, they had risen against the army. And Rios Montt, beginning a policy that started under Lucas, but made, he made much more systematic, he sent the army sweeping one by one through the villages of the highlands. And I actually saw a military document where they estimated that 662 rural villages were, in their words, annihilated. And they would go into the villages, they would gather everyone in the square, They would tell them that the army had arrived, that their only hope for survival was to come to the good, to renounce those who were against the army. And then they would read from lists compiled by the Hevos, the military intelligence, of people who were supposedly giving food to the guerrillas, or working with the priests, or working with the peasant organizers, and then they would execute them in front of the other villages. They would shoot them in the head with their Uzis. They would make their neighbors dig a pit into which the bodies would be thrown, and then they would often grab several people from the crowd, just shoot them at random, often the children. Then as they left, they would burn the homes, slaughter the farm animals, and they did this day after day after day. On some days, 3, 4, and 5 villages would be taken out in this manner. They would leave behind these burning hulks, the decapitated bodies, often hundreds slaughtered at a time. And in the midst of this campaign, Reagan personally went to Central America, met with General Rios Montt, and said that Guatemala was getting a bum rap on human rights. Now, it was a similar story in neighboring El Salvador. As with Guatemala, the U.S. policy of backing terror and backing an oligarchy which lived high while many thousands of children died from hunger, the U.S. policy of backing them went back a long way. In Guatemala, in 1954, Eisenhower had sent in the CIA to overthrow a democratically elected government and put the army in power. Likewise, in Salvador, a very sophisticated military death squad apparatus had been built up under a program launched under the JFK, the Kennedy administration, which actually sent in CIA and State Department and Green Beret people to set up a communication system, at that time a radio teletype, which was the high technology of the day, which linked the intelligence services of Guatemala, Salvador, Somoza's Nicaragua, Honduras, and they would exchange across borders information they had gathered on subversives, information they had gathered with CIA assistance in files. I actually was shown some of these files in Salvador by some of the officers there who were very proud of them, explaining that how the CIA technicians had shown them how to put them together, how to maintain them in good systematic order. This was before the advent of and the wide use of computers. They did it with paper, but they managed to find their victims. And through the 60s and the 70s, they carried out many assassinations. But when Reagan came in, it became larger scale. It became more systematic. Reagan's chief foreign policy thinker, Gene Kirkpatrick, who became his advisor to the UN, actually, by some accounts, got her job in the administration. It first came to the attention of Reagan and his inner circle when she wrote an essay for the American Enterprise Institute in which she explicitly praised the Salvadoran death squads. This was the essay in which she put forward her idea that the U.S. Should be backing authoritarian governments like those of Guatemala and Salvador. And she referred to the Hernandez Martinez Brigades, which was one of the sets of death squads in Salvador, which was named after an old Salvadoran general who in the 1930s had staged a massacre of tens of thousands of peasants as U.S. naval warships supporting him hovered offshore. And Kirkpatrick said that the modern-day death squads who carried on in his name invoked his name because he was seen as a civic hero by the Salvadoran people. Kirkpatrick was saying that these death squads were admired by the people because they restored a civic order. And by putting forward that theory, she came to the attention of the administration. She became one of the main drivers of their foreign policy. And under Reagan, the U.S. not only gave extensive covert backing, as was done in Guatemala, but also overt. They sent in Green Berets, U.S. Army troops, who openly assisted the Salvadoran military, National Guard, and Treasury police. At one point, there was at the time a famous incident in which a group of American nuns and church workers were waylaid on a road, abducted by elements of the troops of the Salvadoran National Guard. They were raped, they were murdered, and afterward, Alexander Haig, Reagan's Secretary of State, suggested that they had died in an exchange of gunfire, that these were pistol-packing nuns who apparently got what they deserved. Gene Kirkpatrick said that, well, these were not real nuns, suggesting that they were up to some, they were up to no good, perhaps helping the poor of El Salvador. One of the people who, in the mid-80s, from 84 to 86, actually ran the U.S. Military operation in El Salvador, Colonel James Steele, is currently in Baghdad. He is the counselor for Iraqi security forces to Bremer. He's in charge of putting together and training the Iraqi security forces. And Elliot Abrams, who was really second only to Kirkpatrick as an ideologue and planner of the Central American massacres, is now running Middle East policy at the National Security Council for the Bush administration.
Alan Nairn, I want to thank you very much for being with us. We have 30 seconds, last comment, as you reflect back on the 1980s in Central America.
Well, I think National Security, National Guard, and Treasury Police. At one point, there was at the time a famous incident in which a group of American nuns and church workers were waylaid on a road, abducted by elements of the troops of the Salvadoran National Guard. They were raped, they were murdered, and afterward, Alexander Haig, Reagan's Secretary of State, suggested that they had died in an exchange of gunfire, that these were pistol-packing nuns who apparently got what they deserved. Gene Kirkpatrick said that, well, these were not real nuns, suggesting that they were up to some, they were up to no good, perhaps helping the poor of El Salvador. One of the people who, in the mid-80s, from 84 to 86, actually ran the U.S. Military operation in El Salvador, Colonel James Steele, is currently in Baghdad. He is the counselor for Iraqi security forces to Bremer. He's in charge of putting together and training the Iraqi security forces. And Elliot Abrams, who was really second only to Kirkpatrick as an ideologue and planner of the Central American massacres, is now running Middle East policy at the National Security Council for the Bush administration.
Alan Nairn, I want to thank you very much for being with us. We have 30 seconds, last comment.
To Bremer. He's in charge of putting together and training the Iraqi security forces. And Elliot Abrams, who was really second only to Kirkpatrick as an ideologue and planner of the Central American massacres, is now running Middle East policy at the National Security Council for the Bush administration.
Alan Nairn, I want to thank you very much for being with us. We have 30 seconds, last comment, as you reflect back on the 1980s in Central America.
Well, I think if accurate history is written in the future, this will be seen as one of the great crimes of history. And I'm not in the U.S. now, but when I'm hearing about how Reagan is being celebrated, and I don't know, I suspect that a lot of people in Central America, when they hear about that, maybe feel the same way that a lot of Americans feel when they hear the stories about people in other countries wearing Osama bin Laden T-shirts, you know, a feeling of just complete dismay and disgust. I mean, how can people do that? How can people celebrate such a mass killer? And that's a complicated question. There are various reasons why people celebrate mass killers. One of them, though, that especially applies in the case of the U.S. is maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't know that he was a mass murderer. And that is largely the case with what happened in Central America because of the way the U.S. press covered it and failed to cover it. The facts never got through to the American public. If they did, people would not stand for it. But Reagan, one thing you have to say for Reagan, and one thing I think you also have to say for Bush now, is that they justly and appropriately for politics spoke in terms of good and evil, because a lot of politics is good and evil. But you know, he lied about it. What he did was evil. What Bush is doing now is evil when he causes the death of civilians. And Americans have to face the facts. They have to look at things as they really are. And then you can't do anything about the victims in Salvador and Guatemala now, but you can do something about those who are still alive. I mean, for example, I mentioned Coca-Cola in Guatemala. Dozens of union organizers there were gunned down by death squads. Almost the exact same thing has happened in recent years in Colombia at the Coca-Cola franchise there. One union leader pops up, he's gunned down. Another one pops up, he's gunned down.
On that note, Alan, we have
to continue and they have to stop.
We have to leave it. Alan Aaron, thank you for joining us. Some of Alan Aaron's articles from the 1980s, his coverage of Latin America, will be at our website at www.democracynow.org. As we